Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General George Peach Taylor, Surgeon General of the United States Air Force. Also joining us in our conversation is Michael Perry. General, we understand that you acted as the Air Force Healthcare Representative in the Base Realignment and Closure Process, otherwise known as BRAC. Could you tell us about the recommendations of the BRAC with respect to military healthcare?
Sure, Al. There were three main medical recommendations that were approved by the commission, modified slightly, and then passed through Congress, so they're now law. We're in the middle of implementing those approved recommendations, the easy way to say it. The three main areas are in consolidating inpatient health care. If you think about it, most of our major hospitals in the department were built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they're built in a style of medicine that we don't practice anymore. Very large inpatient capability with long dwell times. Patients stayed in hospitals long periods of time. And as you know now, with the advent of same-day surgery and with advanced therapeutics, that people have very short hospital stays. So we made a bunch of recommendations to close smaller hospitals and to consolidate hospitals that were in the same area. Second major recommendation was to combine basic medical training at one location. So instead of having separate locations for the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force to train laboratory technicians, we're going to put them all at Fort Sam Houston, and so they can get the core of the science together and then continue with their service-specific training outside that. So there's some efficiency in that. And then the third area was to consolidate research and development in major areas such as biological, chemical, aerospace medicine, battlefield health and trauma, to combine the research and development activities of the three services and co-locate them in one location so they can use common systems, common equipment, and develop a common approach or a more well-rounded approach to the issues that face us all.
General, how will the BRAC impact the U.S. Air Force healthcare here in the Washington, D.C. area?
Well, the Air Force has two major facilities in the National Capital Region, a clinic at Bowling and a hospital at Andrews. The BRAC recommendation, if you'll recall, for the National Capital Region is to expand the Navy hospital at Bethesda and build a new hospital at Fort Belvoir, and that will allow us then to close the hospital that's at the Walter Reed Post. So there'll be a new Walter Reed National Military Medical Center at Bethesda, a new hospital at Belvoir, and by doing that, the Andrews Hospital can reduce its size and close its inpatient function and do outpatient surgery and a large clinic function at that organization. We'll be able to provide the same throughput, the same work, but it will be done at two main hospitals. That's the largest impact in the National Capital Region. For the Air Force, we still have to maintain a fairly robust capability at Andrews because that is the center for all of our wounded that return to the U.S. They transit from the large C-17s that land every 2 to 3 days at Andrews with our sick and wounded, and it's a transfer point over to Walter Reed and Bethesda or to other places downrange.
Dr. Taylor, continuing along on the BRAC discussion, you mentioned earlier about this training that takes place at Fort Sam Houston for the military medics. Would you speak to that in a little more detail, please?
If you think about it, what we're trying to establish at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio is a university for medical training. And in that university, there'll be three colleges. There'll be a college for Air Force medicine, there'll be a college for Navy medicine, college for Army medicine, but like a university, we'll share laboratories, classrooms, instructors, common curriculum. But in the end, you're still going to develop airmen, sailors, medics, and corpsmen for the Navy and medics for the Army out of this one school. We also have a large number of graduate medical education programs that are not standalone Army or standalone Navy. Classic examples are there are a number of residency programs, general surgery and others, orthopedics down in San Antonio that are actually joint Air Force Army programs. And as we set up the National Capital Region, the programs that are run at the new Walter Reed National Military Medical Center at Bethesda will be joint graduate education programs. So I think it'll give us a chance to train together, because certainly today when you walk into facilities in Iraq and Afghanistan, you're not exactly sure who you're going to see in terms of an Air Force medic, an Army medic, and a Navy medic. You can't really tell. If you go to Landstuhl today in Germany, which is the transit point coming from Central Command back to the States, the facility has Army, Navy, and Air Force medics working side by side. So we operate that way, so it's natural for us to operate in peacetime back in the States that way in jointly staffed facilities and to train that way. And so there's going to be a lot of work to make this occur, and it's going to take 3 or 4 or 5 years to build the buildings and move all the people and set the curriculum. But I'm very optimistic that this is exactly the right thing we need to be doing for our people.
Moving away from the BRAC issue, you personally have been very enthusiastic about the Air Force Aeromedical Evacuation Program, or system, and its impact on the Joint Service Team. Could you tell our listeners about the system and the results that you're seeing?
Well, if you think about it, we place our troops in harm's way very long way from home. And the aeromedical evacuation system, if you think about it, is the lifeline back to the U.S. from very long distances. We put our troops in harm's way and they get injured or they get sick. We have to be able to stabilize them and then get them to the best possible care. And in the end, we need to get them home. And this is what the aeromedical evacuation system is all about. At times of high conflict, you can understand we'll have lots and lots of injured people that we need to flow through the system. So it has to be robust enough to move several hundred casualties per day through the system out from a very far forward area to back to an area where you have very rich medical resources. The aeromedical evacuation system that we've got today is completely different in terms of what we were able to do than even in the first Persian Gulf War 15 years ago. We move patients as soon as they're stabilized. We used to have to wait till about 7 days post-op to move a patient. Now we can move a patient within minutes of their surgery for a couple of reasons. One is we use all available airframes. You don't have to wait for the airframe to arrive. You can go pick an airplane off of the ramp, convert it to an aeromedical status, throw a crew on, and fly them out. But you can also move critically injured patients. We've been able to develop a flyaway team of 3 people with their backpack, advanced diagnostics and advanced therapeutics that you can make an ICU out of a litter position on an airplane and move folks back. To give you a sense of the scope of the aeromedical evacuation mission, if you look at what we've done from Southwest Asia, last year we moved 8,000 patients back last year. Now, only a much smaller fraction of that are actually battle injuries. Most of the people we move are normal disease or normal accidents that occur. Since the beginning of Operation Enduring Freedom back in 2001, we've moved 33,000 patients back from the Central Command area back to the U.S. The interesting thing is that in Vietnam, it normally took about 45 days-ish to move a patient from Vietnam till they returned to the U.S. In the Desert Storm, it was more like 10 days to 2 weeks to get a patient from point of injury back to the States. It is not an unusual story to talk to a Marine who was, say, fighting in Fallujah, and he remembers getting hurt. He remembers going to his first resuscitation station. And then the next thing he remembers, he woke up in Bethesda, and that was 36 hours later. So you can have a Marine injured in Fallujah, pass through maybe 8 different healthcare teams, resuscitation team, initial resuscitation team, clean up in the hospital in Iraq, up to Landstuhl in Germany, again restabilized, and then transferred to Bethesda. And all that can happen in as little as 36 hours. And it's routine within 2 to 3 days. And so the important part of this is, number one, is the troops down there know what we can do for them, that we're getting to them within an hour. If we can get you to the main hospital within an hour, you have a 96% chance of surviving. It's our statistics. They know that they're going to be at the highest level of care extraordinarily fast. So we have a lot more people surviving with a lot more terrible injuries now because they're not dying early. And for the folks that are on the battlefield, we make this kind of capability of stabilizing patients very far forward is a normal practice, and that practice is not just for U.S. people. It's for take care of contractors. We take care of other U.S. civilians. We take care of Iraqis. We take care of Iraqi security forces, and we take care of the occasional insurgent. And from the medical standpoint, it doesn't matter what kind of patient. This is a patient that needs help, and our job is to fix them. So the beautiful part about the air medical evacuation system is by being able to move patients quickly away from the hospitals, you leave empty beds and capability forward, so you don't have to put as many beds forward. You don't have to put as many medics in harm's way because you can clear the hospital quickly.
General, that's a phenomenal capability. We understand that your servicemen and women supported the evacuation of injured during Hurricane Katrina. Could you tell us about this support and perhaps what lessons did your team learn that may help them in caring for the injured during a wartime situation?
If you recall, the levees broke in New Orleans. The levees broke on Monday night, Tuesday morning. By Wednesday morning, we were beginning to move assets as quickly as we could in theater, and our first folks arrived in the middle of that week at the International Airport. This is the first active duty folks. Now, there had already been Guard and Reserve medics in the Superdome, in the Convention Center, and in the airport trying to work the casualty flow. As the air bridge was set up, you remember the vivid pictures of the Coast Guard and the Army and the Air Force and the Navy people pulling people off of rooftops. And you remember the long line of helicopters landing at the airfield at the International Airport. Well, at the other end of that, the Air Force medics, along with the FEMA medics and the local medics, had established a system inside to triage the patients, figure out who was ill and who could simply go on a normal airplane ride. And over the 3 days, the Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we moved 2,500 sick patients through the air medical evacuation system to Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, Atlanta, Baton Rouge, other places for health care. At one point in time, we had two C-130s full with patients leaving every 90 minutes. There were also the same stream of ambulances were coming in, as you saw from the airfield part. The thing that was amazing for us is that the medics that we brought in unpacked not very much equipment. It was more of a stabilize and move environment, very similar to what I was saying in Baghdad, which is if the patients can fly on an airplane, we can get them to a higher level of care very quickly. And so we were able to move 2,500 patients to the right level of care very quickly there. And the interesting question from a wartime perspective of that is we have always measured medical capability in the field by the number of beds that exist in the field. So what do beds mean? It's really more of a capacity to move patients through. So it's one of the challenges we're wrestling with right now is how do you measure how much capacity you put out there, because the air medical evacuation system allows you to clear patients so quickly. So how much do you need to put forward? And that's one of the more difficult things. I'm very proud of the men and women that were out there, total force, Army, Navy, Air Force, Guard, Reserve. There were Forestry Service people, there were Marshall folks, all sorts of interesting people teaming together there. But one of the FEMA docs that had been there from the first said that, you know, the interesting part about you Air Force medics is everybody that you took care of, you treated them as if they were your brother or your sister or your mom or your dad or your grandma or your children. And that was very important.
That's fantastic. How is the Air Force implementing the military health record? We will ask Air Force Surgeon General, Lieutenant General George Peach Taylor, to explain this to us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.